We're on the third chapter, the Chelkei HaZehirus, concerning the divisions of watchfulness. What Ha'achas, one, she'yiz boinein, that he give consideration, Mahu atoyin amiti she'yivcha boi ha'odom, what is the true, the ultimate good that a person must choose. And also, on the opposite, the harahu amiti sheyonos mimena. What is the ultimate and true evil from which one must escape? So, step number one is, what are the goals? The hashenis, having established what the goals are, al hamase mashahu oisa, is to be cautious and watchful over one's actions, lirois, to see, im he miklol hatoiv or miklol haro, do they belong to the category of that which is good or the category of that which is evil. As simple as this sounds, one of the cases that Ramchal has made is that people err not so much because of improper thinking as because of failure to think. And he insists that we, in the chapter before, that we be deliberate in all our actions. And now he's simply establishing what are the guidelines for deliberation. And the guidelines for deliberation are, first of all, what are the goals? Secondly, what are the ways to get there? Nobody would jump in their car and say, let's go. And say, well, going where? I don't know, we'll just go. And yet there are so many people who go through many things in their life without giving consideration what is the ultimate goal that I am trying to establish. And then, once that's been established, what is the way to get there? V'zeh, and furthermore, these two principles apply b'shas ma'isa v'shalai b'shas ma'isa, both at the time that one is doing an action and also even when one is inactive, meaning b'shas ma'isa, at the time that one is doing the action, shalai yasa shum ma'isa b'bli she'ishkel oisa b'moizne zayis ha'yidia, that he does not do anything without first weighing it carefully in the balance of what we have said before. Is this, what are the goals, and how does this fit into the pattern? It really all has to do with how seriously we consider life and what our purpose in life is. A while back, I had been given some cash with a $100 bill. And when I went in to pay for something with a $100 bill, the merchant took it and put it through a little apparatus, clearly to test it out as to whether it was valid or not. There are some counterfeit $100 bills circulating. So because it was important to him, before accepting the $100 bill, he had to see whether it was real or not. It was ridiculous to take money and lose by it, and give me change yet and lose by it. So he has a little apparatus there through which he puts the money to see, is this real or is it counterfeit? That's the same kind of mental apparatus that we should put things to the test, but we would only do so once we have the feeling, like the merchant does, that this, if it's counterfeit, then I stand to lose. And if we had that idea about our actions, then we would have a little apparatus through which we process every action. Is this what I should be doing or not? So at the time of doing anything, it should be processed through the mental vehicle of, is this contributing to the goal or not? Now, what does it mean, not during the time of action, v'shalei b'shas ma'isa, and even when one is not engaged in any action, she'ala lefonav zichu klal ma'asov, that a person should review his actions, v'yishkel oisam kemoiken v'moizem yishkel oisam, and also put them through the apparatus, l'irois to see ma'yesh b'hem me'hara l'manyitcha oisoi, to be able to see what is bad in them, what is harmful, in order to reject it, and what is good, in which one should persist and reinforce it. And if a person finds in his review that there have been things that have been bad, then he must give consideration and research in his mind, what kind of a strategy can he use, in order to rid oneself of it and to cleanse oneself. Now, here it's really a question of applying good business principles. A good businessman, if he goes to do something, will take a look at any transaction. Is this going to, what are the risks over here? What are the gains? And if it turns out that the risks are too great and the gains are small, obviously he's not going to do it. After he comes to a decision that if this is a worthwhile transaction, then having thought it through, then he will go through with it. Now, having done that, there comes a time, whether it's at the end of a month or the end of 3 months or the quarter, whatever, an accounting period, that he wants to do a review of what's happened during the 3 months. And what's happening this past quarter, and he may take a look at what he's done. He said, well, look, I bought this merchandise, and at the time that I thought it, I thought it would be good. Turned out that it's a bummer, and so he does is he marks it down and puts it on sale, gets rid of it, cuts his losses, and thinks about, now what do I do next to either compensate for that or to increase in profits. And that's because his goals are clear. His goals are clear that he's in business to make money and to avoid losses. And once that goal is clear, then he does the necessary things to approach his actions with calculation and periodically to review and to see what stock moved, what stock didn't move. That's simply good. Business practices. And all he's suggesting is to put our regular business practices into action when it comes to our life situation. There's a story of the Vaditchava, that the Vaditchava once came to an inn, and while he was sitting there, a man rushes in and looks around, and he sees the Vaditchava sitting there, obviously. The Vaditchava's appearance said about who he is, and he comes over and he says, pardon me, are you possibly a shechet? So the Vaditchava says, well, yes, I'm a shechet. He said, oh, you're a godsend. He says, I'm the local butcher, and I have a cow, and if I don't shechet it now, in another day or so, that cow's going to die and it'll be a total loss. But if I can shecht it, I can sell this meat and save myself from a loss. So the Vaditchava says, well, I'll be very glad to help you. But I must tell you something. I am itinerant now, and I'm desperately in need of money to marry off daughter. I wonder, I know that I will have money coming in, but I wonder if you could lend me 50 rubles and I'll be able to pay you back in a matter of 2 months. So the guy says, what, are you crazy? A total stranger, and I should lend you 50 rubles? So the Vaditchava says, well, just listen to what you've said. Okay? Someone you don't know you won't trust with 50 rubles. Now, granted, it's money. Maybe a lot of money. Okay? But it's not your life. And as far as eating meat that's not kosher and selling meat that's not kosher, that doesn't bother you. How do you know I'm a shechet? Because I said so. That you're willing to trust on my word. So to trust me that I'm a shayachet and to eat from my shkita and to give everybody else to eat from the meat that I have shechted, even though I may be a total phony, that doesn't bother you. For that I'm reliable. But when it comes to 50 rubles, there you have to have a Dun & Bradstreet report. So we see that the Torah tells us by Avram Avinu, that when he came to marry off Yitzchak, the Torah says he called over Eliezer. Who was Eliezer? Avdo is the Kanbeisa. He was his trusted servant who had been with him for many years. HaMoishel B'chol HaShaloi, who ruled over everything that he had. So Eliezer was a manager over Avram's extensive wealth. And Avram was very wealthy. And Eliezer had total control of everything. And Avram never bothered to supervise what Eliezer did. HaMoishel B'chol HaShaloi. Eliezer ruled over everything that he had. And he says, now come here, I'm going to give you a solemn oath. Because now I'm asking you to do something that's more important than mine. I want you to go find a wife for Yitzchak. And you're very trusted to me. I've trusted you with everything, right? But for one thing, I trust you. And for the other thing, I'm going to have a solemn oath. That's Avram's hashgofa. That was Avram's outlook on life. And with many other people, it's just the reverse. I had a dialogue with a conservative rabbi. This is a dialogue through letters in the editor, where I had written in that when people approach questions of Yiddishkeit, they should look for an authority on the decision with the same diligence, with the same caution, as if they were approaching a heart operation. Right? Now, in open heart surgery, they would probably not allow their family doctor to do it. They wouldn't even allow their family doctor to make the ultimate decision as to whether this procedure is necessary. And after having the family doctor had said so, they would go to Cleveland Clinic or to Houston or to Boston. They would spend an enormous amount of money before they would submit themselves to a serious procedure. And even though they trust their family doctor. Yeah, but look, trusting him with a sore throat is one thing, and here we're coming to something that my very life depends on it, and I'm going to have nothing but the ultimate best opinion. I said, that's all I want. If you recognize your authorities as being of the same caliber in Torah knowledge as the heart doctor, the surgeon whom you would allow to operate on your heart, fine. So the response was, you can't compare the two. In other words, this particular person was not viewing one's observance of Torah and mitzvahs with the same seriousness, with the same gravity as one would observe, as one would give consideration to one's heart or lungs. And so that's the difference. And all the Mesidus Yisharim is saying over here is, look, all I'm asking you is to be as deliberate about your life as you are about your business. Unfortunately, too many people have the consideration that Jack Benny said when he was held up. And the guy said, your money or your life? And he said, well, give me a few minutes to think about it. I'm thinking. Huh? Now, one does not think your money or your life. But if we would follow the same sound principles that we do to other aspects of our life and apply them to Yiddishkeit, we'd have a better grasp and a better Yiddishkeit behavior. This is what our sages told us when they said, actually, it would have been better for a person had he never been brought into existence, because the risks of doing wrong are much greater than the likelihood that a person will behave properly. Therefore, one is always much closer to loss than to profit. However, no one asked us about it. Balkoha hatachai, we are born into this world against our will. But now that he does exist, yefashpesh b'masav, let him carefully research his actions. The Ikad Amra, others have said that the expression was yefashpesh, not yefashpesh b'masav, to research his behavior, his actions, but yemashmesh b'masav, let him feel his actions. And the difference is, yefashpesh b'masav means look at what you've done, is it good or bad? Yemashmesh b'masav is take every action that you've done and analyze it, meaning even our good actions have to be analyzed as to whether they are as good as they should be. It's like the story of two chassidim where one chassid said to the other that I'm terribly afraid of judgment day when they bring me all of the record and accounting of all the sins that I've done. And the other said, you know, that really doesn't bother me too much, because if they do that, I will say, look, you gave me a yetzer hara, you gave me an evil inclination, the temptation was strong, I couldn't overcome it, I was human, I fell in, I fell into the trap. He says, what I'm really worried about is when they're going to show me an accounting of the mitzvahs that I've done. And they'll show me how I was lacking in performance of the mitzvahs, and that I did the mitzvahs perfunctorily, and I did not have the proper attitude and the proper kavona, and I did not do mitzvahs properly. He says, what am I going to say then? That's not a question of temptation. He says, I did a temptation. He says, not having done mitzvahs. So the question is, yemashmish b'maisav means to feel, as you will explain. Both of these approaches are very necessary and very effective. The first expression, that one should do an inventory on one's actions, is to look over all of one's deeds, of his boyin, to give consideration. Can I find among things that I should not have done, that do not follow the mitzvah of Hashem and His laws? And if he finds things that are improper, he should rid himself of it. Achamishmush, to feel things, means that means taking the good deeds that one has done, the mitzvahs that one has done, and analyze them. Lachkar, to research, v'liros, to see, hayesh minyonim eze pniya shaloi toiva, is there something in them that's not good, or is there something bad about the way he's done the mitzvahs, sheyitzach lasir levara, to which is necessary to rid oneself of. V'hareza kimemashmesh bebeget, that is like somebody who is feeling the quality of a garment that he's going to purchase, livchoin, to establish, hatoiv v'chozaku, is it strong and durable, or is it weak and likely to deteriorate quickly? Similarly, a person should feel his actions, to arrive at a understanding of their quality, with the ultimate testing, so that they, all of his actions are clean and pure. We had mentioned the story of the Chayza, the seer of Lublin, who was returning from Tashlich, the Tashlich on Rosh Hashanah, where one symbolically throws away all one's averus, casts them away never into the water, never to be retrieved again. And on his way back, he met his Talmud, his disciple, the Rapshitz of Rav Naftoli of Rapshitz. And he asked the Rav Naftoli, where are you going? He says, I'm going down to the water to retrieve for myself those sins that you threw away. So the Chayza had thrown away as being unacceptable the kinds of things that for the Rapshitz, that for his disciple would be considered desirable acts. Meaning that for the Chayza, these things, even though they might appear very valuable for someone else, for him would be no good. And it's very similar to garments that a wealthy person would discard might be very desirable for a person of lesser means. But for the wealthy person, that's no good for him anymore. I'm above that. I heard the other day somebody told me, we say in the Brocha, Shemin Esra, HaRoitze B'Seshuva, that Hashem desires our tshuva. It's not only Hashem desires our tshuva. Hashem desires that we shouldn't sin. What do you mean, HaRoitze B'Seshuva, that He desires tshuva? I mean, if we've sinned, but to say that Hashem desires tshuva, He says, yeah, He says, because it's the, like the tshuva of the one who said, had I known today, had I known yesterday what I know today, then I would have behaved differently yesterday. So Rojav is a tshuva detached, not necessarily tshuva on sins. Hashem doesn't desire sins. But Rojav is a tshuva means that Hashem desires that each day we should grow in our Kedusha, and we should grow spiritually, so that the kinds of things that we did yesterday don't meet our standards anymore today. So we do tshuva today on the good that we did yesterday because it wasn't good enough. Realizing by what we know of Hashem today and by the understanding that we've come to today, yesterday's behavior was unacceptable. And this is what he means, yamashpesh b'masa. First, that one should do an inventory to eliminate the wrongs that one has done. And then he said, yamashpesh b'masa, the good things that one has done also have to come under scrutiny to see as to whether they've been and they met the standard of excellence that we should have. To be continued. What he had said last time was that in order to be cautious that one does not violate the rules of life as Hashem has dictated them, it's necessary to be on the alert, and to be on the alert means two things. One, keep in mind the goal, and at all times keep in mind the goal, and at all times deliberate on each action, on each thing that you're doing. Does this bring me closer to the goal, or does it detract from the goal? And he says this is a kind of accounting that a person should set aside time to do and make a sincere effort to do this every day. And he says it's no different than a businessman would do in making an account of what is his inventory, what products are moving, which are his profitable products, and which are those that are causing him a loss that he has to get rid of. The Chachamim Zochenim Levracha, and our Chachamim, our sages, Hareinu Beferusher HaChesh Mazeh, taught us this when they quote the Pasuk in the Torah, Vehushamasha Amu, Al Kem Yemu Hamashlim Bayu Cheshbon. The Pasuk says, if you take it literally, the Pasuk says, the poets who speak in parables will say, come to Cheshbon, which is a city in Moab that was conquered, and the Torah is there speaking there in a lyrical form about the defeat of Moab. The same words, though, can be interpreted to mean something else. Moshel not only means someone who says a parable, but Moshel is the word to mean a ruler. Cheshbon, which is a proper noun, a name of a city, also has the Hebrew meaning of Cheshbon as an accounting. So he says, Al Ken Yemu HaMoshelim Bo Cheshbon means, therefore, those who are the rulers say, come, let us make an accounting. And who are the rulers? Al Ken Yemu HaMoshelim BeYitzchom, those are those who rule over their own inclinations, over those who rule over their temptations, people who are masters of their bodies, who have achieved mastery over their desires. They are the ones who can say, Boyu Nachashiv Cheshbon Shel Olam, come and let us make an accounting. Hefsed Mitzvah Keneged Tzchora, what do you lose when you do a mitzvah, and how much do you gain from having done it? On the other hand, Uschar Aveira, if you think you're going to have any gain from doing a forbidden act, Keneged said that make an accounting, a reckoning as to how much you're going to lose. Now, who should make the accounting? Who are the ones who are who are capable of making this type of accounting? The Zakir, Eitzamita says, it's this valuable recommendation to make an accounting of life. A Yuchlala says, this cannot be given, Veloiliris Amita, or to see his truth, Ela Oysam Shekva Yotsu Mitachas Yad Yitzchom, only those who have gone out of the enslavement to their own physical desires, umoshlu boy, and those who have achieved a mastery over it and are the rulers over themselves. Kimishu adayin chovosh b'maaseh yitzroi, a person who is still imprisoned and enslaved by the bonds of his desires, his physical desires, ein of royes ha'emes hazois, that person cannot see this truth, and Yochalakiran cannot recognize it. Ki hayetzal mesame es enav mamash, because a person's physical desires literally blind one. Now, here he is saying an absolute truth. The Torah says, a judge who takes graft will be deterred from the truth. He will be blinded. There is no way that a person, Moses says, person can say, well, I can take a bribe, but it won't affect me. That is an absolute impossibility. And here he says, just as there is a physical perception, there is a perception of morals and a perception of values and perception of good and evil. That perception is literally blinded, just as physical vision is blinded by something that will interfere with a person's sight. A bribe will literally blind one to the truth. And the desires that a person has, that he wishes to gratify his physical desires, that is a bribe. And a person who is still under domination of physical desires and has not overcome them cannot be expected possibly to have accurate values. So therefore, who are the ones who can make a proper accounting as to what you achieve by mitzvahs over whatever inconvenience they cause, or what you lose by doing aveiros over whatever gratification you get from them? Those are the moshelim, those who have already achieved mastery over themselves. Now, they can be individuals who are complete tzaddikim, who from their beginning of their lives worked on achieving mastery of themselves, or they can be balei tshuva, people who had been subject to their physical drives and later overcame them and achieved mastery. And in this way, it is even possible that the person who has been at a point where he has given into his physical drives and has overcome it and has achieved mastery may actually be in a superior position to be a teacher and a leader. As the Gemara says, "V'mokim sheba b'tshuva imdim shamein tzaddik gamor yichol lamed." In the place occupied by a Baal Tshuva cannot even be occupied by a person who has been an absolute tzaddik. And the reason for that is that the person who is the absolute tzaddik may not know all the tactics how to overcome the temptations, since he's never had, has never been there. And in working with recovering people from alcohol or drugs, it's extremely valuable to have someone on the team who has been an alcoholic and has recovered, or has been a drug addict and recovered, because they are the ones who know the ropes and who know what tactics you got to use. I tell a story of a surgeon who was operating and ran into some very serious complications in the surgery. So he told one of the assistants, go out in the surgical suite and see if there's anybody there who can come in and give me a hand with this. So the assistant went out and he came back in and he says, chief of surgery is out there, should I call him in? He says, no way, he wouldn't know what to do. He's never been in a mess like this. So sometimes in order to achieve a dominance over temptation, one has to have the experience of someone who's been there, who knows what the slyness and the stealth of the Yetzer Hara is, and what kind of techniques and tactics are necessary to overcome them. And a person, whether he's a tzaddik gomel or a baal tshuva, but being that he is free and is not blinded by those drives, is in a position where he can be of counsel and give proper guidance into values. However, somebody who is still under the influence of the Yetzirah cannot possibly be expected to do so. So if someone says, well, look, just leave me alone and I'll reflect on it myself and I'll think about what the proper things to do, and I don't need anyone's guidance. And this is like sitting with a person who's an addict, and they'll say, look, let me figure out what I'm supposed to do. As long as he is under the dominance of the craving for alcohol and cocaine or heroin, he'll never figure out what to do to get him out of it, because the addiction dictates to him what he must do. Behine, a person who is still under the dominance of his temptation, who kaholach b'choshech, is like someone who walks in the dark, sheyesh lofanav mirsholes, who has obstacles in his way, and he can't see them because of the darkness. And this is why the Chachamim have said, you lay down darkness and it was night. And that's a verse in Tillim, in Psalms. And the Gemara explains, this refers to this world that we live in, this physical world, which is comparable to a dark night. The Hoven, he says, you should understand how wonderful this tiny little phrase is in conveying a principle of truth. If you just take a little time to understand what they're saying. The darkness of the night can cause a person to misperceive things in two ways. First of all, it simply can make things, it can be so dark that things are not visible, so that a person will not see what is in front of him, and he'll trip over something because simply he doesn't see it. It's too dark to see it, which is one way. Or the darkness can cause a misperception, not that he won't see it, but that he sees something in the darkness of the shadows, or in the shadows of the darkness, and misperceives the thing, which is maybe even worse. He'll see a pillar and mistake it to be a person. The Adam Kilo Amad, there may see a person, mistake it to be a pillar. So you may have the darkness may cause you simply to be sightless. Or, what is, may sometimes even be worse, it distorts your perception, so you see something and you're sure of what you see and yet it isn't. Similarly, the earthiness, the materialism, the physical desires of this world, for the mind, that produces a state of darkness which interferes with one's mental perception, and it causes these two errors in perception that we've talked about. First of all, physical desires blind a person to see the obstacles in front of him. There is no one who has ever taken a drink or a drug who did not think that that's what he should be doing at the time. And I heard them verbalize this. One fellow said, I never in my life took a drink unless I thought that was the proper thing to do at that moment. And all judgments come around to rationalize and to justify what the person is doing as being an absolute necessity for this moment. So it says it does not, the physical craving does not permit a person to see the truth and what the consequences can be. So therefore, v'nimtzah ha'psoim ha'olchim, people who are duped by this, by their physical desires, ha'olchim l'vetach, they walk as though they are sure of themselves, as though they are walking on solid ground, the noflim v'oivdim, and they fall and they are destroyed, mibli she'igiyam pachat chilo, without having the fear of what's happening. They simply don't perceive the dangers involved because the physical craving, the earthly desires, blind them to the truth. V'hu mash omra kosov, and this is what Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei in Proverbs, derech rishoim ka'afela, the way of the wicked is like a darkness. Lo yodo v'mayu kashelo, they are unaware of the obstacles that are tripping them. The Omer, and again he says, Orum ro v'nisto upsoyim avru v'nanosho. A wise man can see the evil and hide from it, while a fool will pass on and suffer. Will not avoid it and walk into the thing and as not seeing that it's there. The Omer, again he says, Uchsil mis'aber uvoteach. A fool becomes infuriated and is secure with what is doing, with what he's doing, and he can't see the folly and the danger in it.
And he becomes infuriated and he's secure.
The fool is secure in what he is doing and becomes infuriated when he doesn't get his way. It's very similar to what kind of reaction are you going to get from an infant who grabs something which he thinks is very tasty and wants to put it in his mouth and turns out to be, and it's something poisonous, right? And you grab the bottle of poison away from him. What's the infant's reaction going to be? Right? He's going to scream because you've taken it away from him. When you've taken poison away from him, but he doesn't understand that. And similarly, a person who doesn't understand what's dangerous is infuriated, becomes angry when it's taken away from him, and he is totally secure in what he is doing, that this is the thing that he needs. And again, there is no better model of this than to watch what happens with active addiction, where the individual is absolutely destroying himself and is totally oblivious to what the consequences are. And if you try to stop him, I know we had this last night when a fellow came to show last night, 2 o'clock after Slichus, was brought in from out of town and refused to stay. He came to talk to me 2 o'clock last night after Slichus. He wants to leave town. Can see that what he's doing is totally destroying himself. Kilibam bori lahem ke'ulam. Their hearts are as steadfast and secure in what they're doing. The naiflim, and they fall terem yedem yamirshakol, without having any awareness of what the danger is that they're doing. So that is one way in which the darkness misleads a person by making him oblivious to the dangers that are ahead. But even worse than that, v'atos hasheni, the second mistake, which is even worse than not seeing anything, V'hukashim in addition, which is further the worst, hushemata riyosom, is that it deceives them. The Yetzirah deceives us, our desires deceive us. Not only do we not see it as something bad, but we think it's a positive good. We take a look at something good, we don't recognize it as good, we think the good is bad. And as a result of this misperception, they reinforce themselves and they strengthen their bad deeds. Not only do they lack the capacity to see the truth, which is in front of their eyes, they find ways in which to justify and explain away all the bad things that they do, that they are actually good. And their bad thoughts, and their false concepts, and it twists their thinking and makes them see bad for good and good for bad. This is the greatest evil, hamalafosim, that embraces a person and brings him to the pits of destruction. This is why Yeshaya Novi said, Hashmen leva omazah, the heart of this nation has become fatted. In other words, their emotions are insulated, they don't feel. The oznav hachbed, his ears have become heavy, they don't hear. The einav hosha, their eyes have become pasted, they don't see. And what he means by that is, kol zeh mipnei hayosam tachas hachoshech, because they are enveloped in the darkness, ukvushim tachas memsheles yitzchom, and they are totally subject to the rule of their inclinations. So he says, therefore, as long as a person is under the influence of gratifying one's desires, it is impossible for a person to see the truth, because either they don't see it or they think the good is bad and the bad is good. And watching people mess up their lives every day, we can see exactly what he's talking about. They do things that they think are the greatest good without realizing that they're destroying themselves. However, those who have liberated themselves and have freed themselves from the bonds of temptation, they are in a position now to see what is true, and they can give a person advice about it. So you take a recovered alcoholic, a recovered addict, and he talks to the person, right? And he's in a position where he knows what alcohol has done to him. He knows what drugs have done to him. He knows how destructive they can be. He knows how the rationalizations are worthless. That person is in a position to give proper counsel. Holomaza doima. To what can we compare this to? Legana mevucha, to a maze, a garden maze. Hu agana natua litzchoik, that's a garden which is planted for amusement purposes, how you do Esel HaSorim, that you find by many of the nobility. Shehanetiyos asuim solim solim, they have hedges, tall hedges, planted like walls. Uveneim shvilim rabim, and in the midst of these hedges, there are various paths. Mevuchim emarovim, all interconnected and confused, as a maze is. And this is a kind of thing which they use for amusement purposes. Kulam daimin zelozeh. All the paths seem alike. There's no way by looking at a path to know whether this is going to lead to a dead end or lead to a goal. Va'tachlis bom, the purpose of this maze, is you put a person there, and hulahagia laksad recha shememtsom. In the midst of the maze, there is the goal. There's a high platform, and you're put in a path of the maze, and you say, okay, now find your way to it. Now, what's going to happen is, since all paths look alike, and you have no way of knowing which way you're going, so you're going to go one, find it's a dead end, come back, try another, find the dead end. And that's the way you continue doing it, and time may run out on you, and you haven't gotten to the goal. Now, of course, one person said that he found the goal, because what he did was he retraced the steps. And every time he came to a dead end, he retraced the steps, and at the beginning there he made a sign, an X, to show this is one not to go back again. Now, that's one way to do it. The only thing is that if you've got 150 paths and each one takes a period of time, right, then each time you go down a path and you come back and you find that that was the wrong path, even if you mark it off so not to do it again, but still you're wasting precious time. And depending on the size of the maze and the complexity and the intricacy of the path, you may never have enough time to reach the goal. So it's very expensive, exhaustive, and also a person may not have adequate time to get to the goal. However, the Omnam, however, Hashvilim Ha'ele, some of these paths are Yesharit, are straight, Umagim Be'emes Alasad, some do lead to the goal. Umehem, but many of them, many are misleading. A person may think, oh, this looks like the right path. Right? I can see the goal from here. And if I take this path, I'll get there without knowing. Yeah, but it has no way of knowing. He's going to run into a dead end. The Omnam Ahoylach Ben Ashvilim, the person who is in the maze, who La Yuchal Liras Vladas Kalim Vishvil Amitir Bakesvi, has no way of knowing is he in the right path or in the false path. Kichulam Shavim, because they all look alike. Ben Hevrish B'nei Amlan Reisam, and for the, to the observer, they all look alike. Unless he knows and recognizes, unless somebody who's been through it already knows the correct pattern. However, if there's a person standing on that high porch that the person is supposed to reach, on the platform, he can look down and see all the paths from his vantage point. He can easily tell which are the ones that connect to the platform or not. He's standing there and say, hey, wait a minute, take this one. No, you're making the wrong turn, you're going on the wrong path, that one's the dead end. Right? Take the one over to this side. If somebody wants to believe in him and realizes, hey, that guy's up there, he's telling me the right way to go. Right? He'll reach the goal. And if a person who doesn't want to believe, and wants to say, well, let me try this one. The chances are that he's going to lose his way, he'll never get to the goal. So, the ones who can tell us which way is the way to go are the ones who are standing on the high platform because they've been there and they found the way, and they can recognize it. And it's only absolute stupidity to say, I'm going to ignore them and find my own way. You might find your own way this lifetime, you know, but you may do it long, long after you're collecting Social Security. To be continued.